The Grade Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
Boys!
Get a few today, did you?
To be honest with you, I hate grade cricket.
I went into to play for a team called... the name escaped me.
Obviously, sharing's always a big issue for young kids coming into a senior cricket team.
Tiger was like a wit lead.
A bit of advice to the player, sort of one.
I refer to the great cricketer here and I'll say, this will do a little bit early.
Hello and welcome back to the Great Cricketer. Short turnaround between shows this week, but it's a big show as they all are. Third test preparations for Pakistan, Australia. The second test for the West Indies, England has been completed. Australia still dominating the World Cup. IPL news, Adam Zampa is on the show. Hashtag RCDC. This episode is presented by Custom Swimwear by Budgie Smuggler. All made in Australia. My name is Ian Higgins. Sam Perry sits across the land at the top ends from I and me, the opposite from him. Pez, it's finals time in late March, early April. That's what we're talking, finals cricket. Give me some finals cricket chat. Are you excited for Grey Cricket finals? How's your team looking?
Mate, your team played my team, and that is clubs that we played at nearly a decade ago, or even more in my case, in fifth grade, and your team won. And I knew that through social media. I wish I could kind of read it through the papers in the old days, but... through social media, mate, confession at my end, never played a game of finals cricket. It's a great regret. I absolutely see it as a reflection on my ability. I nearly played in a semi-final once, but was relegated to 12th man because the player they brought in played New South Wales under-19s, even though he hadn't scored a run all year, and I averaged far more than him. And instead of being 12th man, I went to Blues and Roots Music Festival in 2005.
Right.
And I saw REM, actually, and that was really good. REM was good.
But there was always
a R.E.M. Williams. So there was always a massive buzz at the club around finals time. Players stepped up. There was more centre wicket practice happening. There was more trappings for the eyes. I know you've played a good share of finals cricket.
I play my fair share, mate. I play my fair share. Sort of 2-3 stuff. Mate, finals cricket is where it's at. It was good fun because, like, it's just intensity, season on the line gear. And usually for most people, it was like the season on the line is usually about the last game before the Christmas break, where if you don't make that, you basically can't make finals. When you come back after Christmas, it's a tough slog for the rest of the season. It gets hotter, wickets are drier, wickets are flatter. Mate, the game that I think about the most, second grade grand final 2010, my team finished second. Actually, Norths were top. They were first, and we won on first innings, and then got reversed. So lost
you
the
got
grand
reversed.
Final.
Reversed.
But you know, mate, I've always said to maintain you take 4 points in a final. You take 4 points in a final. So there's that. And I barely think about that every day in the shower. But you know, it's been 12 years, so. I've moved on from that. As of you, apparently, because you barely think about that under-19s player, you know, replacing you in that semi-final. Blues and Roots, though, so there's that.
He and his partner just had a baby, actually. Congratulations. And Ben Crawley's daughter. We're good friends. Anyway, he was a better player than me, too, so it was probably a good decision. They went on, did they win the comp? I don't know. I don't think so, actually. Anyway, Blues and Roots 05 was really good, though. We camped and it rained. And so we got absolutely drenched. Saw some good bands. Yeah, cheers.
Well, we'll get the hashtag RCDC later in the show, Pez. But like a lot of the stories that come in, like when tension is at the highest, are they often final stories? And it's often a grand final against like the main rival. They had like some history earlier on the season. Someone said something. Someone did something. Someone didn't turn up. Someone did turn up. And that's when we get the best questions, I feel like. And also, it's just getting into the England season as well, a bit of winter net shit. So this is a prime time. The actual cricket that's being played, a lot of draws in test matches, Pez. A lot of draws I'm seeing at the moment. But, you know, that's just cricket sometimes. Fucking grim. The third test between Australia and Pakistan starts today, or in many ways, Pakistan and Australia. Australia have named an unchanged side. Now, Pez, for me, I don't... it's unnerving when the Australian team announces the team like too far in advance. I want to have some anticipation and trepidation for my eyes when I get to the toss and I want to know who's playing. They've called it too many days out, which says to me this wicket's going to be flat as fuck again.
Yeah, I can't say like I understand the economy of all of that kind of stuff. Like why couldn't you just tell? Just being honest, yeah. Pezza will give a good analysis of this. like why couldn't you just tell the relevant people that they're playing? Like I always presume that they announce it so that the people who might be on the edge of the 11 just know that they're playing, and everyone else knows, and it doesn't become an item for speculation heading into the game. Why couldn't you just tell them so they know and not tell the opposition? Maybe they're worried about some shit there. But I think it's good. Like I think it's good that they've kept Swepson in. Stark's obviously been maintained for reverse reasons. Nathan Lyon took a couple of poles at the end of the last game. I don't know. Still, just like I hope he steps up. And it's a huge game, mate, because like they've played 10 days of hard-nosed, attritional, cliche test cricket. But whatever happens in this test will define the series. And I think that whatever's happened previously is going to be like Men in Black neuralizer shit. Like it's going to be Khawaja scored runs and he's from Pakistan, and I don't really know anything else that happened in the game.
Yeah. I'm actually nervous. I'm nervous about this game. Nervous in the sense that I'm worried that it's going to be as the other two games have been. It's got a potential for Australia to have a famous 1-0 series victory, or some sort of situation where Australia might have to save the game and then it's nil all in the series, which is odd to me. But I'm anxious. I don't know anything about Pakistan. My knowledge of the geography, where the fucking cities are, I'm just an idiot from the internet. So I don't know the characteristics of the Lahore pitch. I'm just nervous because I'm thinking this has the potentials to be the completion of a 15-day preseason, possibles versus probables trial match where blokes just have a hit. You might as well start retiring blokes at the first innings. The fact that Nathan Lyon was on for 100 in that last game when he got 38 as night watchman. Yeah. I take your point with Lyon. He finished 4 for 100 in the fourth innings there the other day. I don't know what else he's supposed to. It's hard to judge. It's hard to judge anyone on these decks, except for Cameron Green and how tall he is. So anyway, this is going to be dated very quickly because the game starts in about 5 hours' time.
Well, as you were saying, mate, who knows? But like that, I share your nervousness and anxiety about it as well. Like I think it's probably like the ghosts of past Asian tours and games and stuff. Like I think Australia just dominating at various points in the series has been a pleasant surprise. And then we obviously get greedy and get upset that they don't play according to Australian conditions in a completely different place in the world. Right. But like as soon as we get some sort of ascendancy, we must complete the job like we're playing at the Gabba. Otherwise, everyone needs to get sacked. But like I feel like they won a great toss in Karachi. And why do I feel like they need that? They might need a little bit of luck again to give themselves a shot, and that maybe Pakistan have been respecting them a fair bit and they don't need to as much. One thing I did enjoy in the lead up to this game, mate, was there was a good article from Bredig in the Age, SMH, Channel 9, whatever you meant to call it, where like it was 34 years ago he revealed that like the team that toured Pakistan voted all bar two players voted to leave the tour pretty early on, citing a conspiracy of dusty pitches and umpires. And everyone except Jamie Siddons and Tony Dottermade. So good leadership from Dottermade, who's gone on to be CEO of Cricket Victoria and is selector now and all this kind of gear. But they even mentioned the sort of dismissals that were being given, and then you look at some of the footage of it because there is some, and it's not that bad. There's two of them with Tim May. They're just I can see either way. One of them was out. One of them was Salmon, But the other two are okay, you know. But that's their big, like, I just think Australian teams of old were probably a little bit less resilient, you know. These guys, the Aussie team, this Aussie team are fighting. They, you know, they give themselves a chance in the third test. See how they go. Also, Imran Khan didn't play that series because he said that it was the wrong time of year to play. It was really hot. So, you know, cricket 34 years ago was good gear, I reckon.
That's fucking amazing. It's like how blokes only play like the home games if it's like close to like where they live. And you turn up.
What he did.
Yeah, you basically turn up. You turn up late, barefoot, walking across the oval, eating a piece of toast, just to let everyone know that's how close you live to the ground.
I like that.
I mean, no wonder Jamie Siddons never played for Australia. If he's voting to stay. He didn't back the boys.
Yeah, that's right.
Pez, something that caught my eye on the internet today was that I've seen this ad that you sent me for Australia. It's like Welcome to Australia. It's like a Pakistan ad welcoming people from Australia. And the guy who's playing an Australian character is obviously Pakistani, and he's wearing an I Heart Sydney t-shirt. And then it's just like all the fucking cliches are rolled out. Aussie, 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 crikey, a bit of fair dinkum gear in there.
Have a cold one. Good.
Yeah. Have a cold one. Have a cold one. Good gear.
It is good gear. Like it was an official welcome, I think. You know, like Ramesh Raja posted it, and like like Nick Hockley's commented on it and stuff. It's a funny ad, but yeah, you just go, well, you know, we are largely seen as like Okabogans overseas, and that's, you know, probably pretty accurate.
I note as well that the Pakistan Australia, the white ball games have been moved to Lahore. We spoke to Adam Zampa, who's just about to head over to Pakistan for that white ball series, which starts, I'm guessing, on the weekend. Given that this fifth test match is due to finish on Friday. And my tip is it'll finish very late on Friday, pretty much at the end of when you have to stop the game completely because there's no result as possible. But yeah, that's
had a look at the deck. Did you look at a few pictures, did you? On Twitter.
Here's the pitch 4 days out. Oh, okay. That's interesting. Yeah, here's what I do, and here's my team. Will Pekowski is set to play for Victoria again, which is exciting. It feels weird that he's only played one test match. And obviously got that 60 against India at the SCG, whenever that was, a year ago. But he's obviously had numerous concussion issues, though there's some sort of evidence now that suggests that all these head knocks haven't resulted necessarily in concussion. They've been some sort of like post-traumatic or like post-stress syndrome or something like that, right? Did you read that?
Yeah, I read that. So he's now cleared for selection in Victoria's next couple of games, and they're looking at a good shot at the final as well. The spin-off from that is that the latest concussion they're saying, which was thought to be his 11th concussion, is now kind of being, I guess, cautiously assessed by experts who, yeah, as you say, like think it might have been a form of post-traumatic migraine or stress-related response, and that there's a panel is saying actually quite a few of these might have been the same thing. So not concussion in of itself, but some response to concussion, which I suppose clouds it all, adds further complexity to it. But most importantly, for journalists now who want to put a number in front of the number of concussions he's got, they can always dispute it now. Well, actually, it wasn't his 11th. It was his 6th or 7th or something like that. But yeah, I mean, maybe that's good for Pekowski. We have no inside track on it. Like, you know, maybe the issue then for him becomes about how he does, mentally manage these head knocks that have happened to him. I don't know. It might actually weed out a few people who do believe they can provide medical analysis online, because that's the newest thing that they know about following vaccinations and the war in Ukraine. I hope he's good. You know, we always say that. We hope he's good. He's a class player. He's got a huge future in cricket if he wants it. It'd be interesting to see whether Chris Rogers selects him for the next two games. Travis Dean came back into the side. He's a bit of a heartbeat of the Victorian cricket team, albeit closer to the end of his career than the beginning. I think he made 147 and 47. So I have a feeling if Pekoski is available and they're keen, like they'll pick him. But it's further complexity, isn't it?
Yeah, they're going to play at the Wacker, so it's probably not. I mean, you can bowl bumpers anywhere. Yeah, you sort of get in the front dog there at the Wacker. You sort of got to get your lengths right. Like most of the sort of travelling teams, they actually bowl too short. Like, of course, you know, what the fuck do I know? It's just whatever the symptoms are, the fact that he can't play, I suppose the scary thing is that it's to do with the head. But if it's like a hamstring and like he gets hit with a volleyball, or he just keeps rolling his ankles. Either way, he continually can't play, and I'm sure there's no one more frustrated than Will about that. But you just hope he's okay and he's making good decisions. But he probably is, because he's in charge of that, and I'm Shane Warne's funeral, mate, and memorial is that was on the weekend. What day is it? Monday. Yeah. So There's lots of nice photos of like former, all the former players, getting together and celebrating Warney's life. And there'll be the state funeral at the MCG is on the 30th, right? I think tickets go on sale for that this week, which I'm sure there'll be a full house for that. Mate, there's something really odd about. I don't know if you've seen the photos of the casket and like all the players and stuff. They're all wearing like St Kilda scarves, the casket had like St Kilda scarves draped over it. There's something unbelievably depressing about like one of Australia's greatest ever players celebrated by his footy team. Can we have something?
Are you criticizing the style of Shane Warne's style on his funeral? I mean, is that tasteful? I think Eddie McGuire was the MC, and and Warne has been quoted as saying like footy is all he wanted to do, and
I know.
It's great. No, but in the sense that like cricket was the rebound option, you know. I literally just became the Mozart of the game.
He just wanted to kick goals for the Saints, though.
Yeah, well, it is depressing for us in the sense that that's the hold that footy has, but it does have that hold, and I think that's kind of, I do think that's kind of cool, and it's, Warne was, like, his life was never all about cricket, was it? Like, he did have other things, though that thing was footy, and we sledge that all the time, because obviously there's some spell that's cast on Victorians, but, let's be serious, it's like, it's quite, it's a big game, and it's deeply loved, and he, that's kind of cool. And everyone was wearing St Kilda scarves, so that was cool. There was footage of the funeral. I don't know if that was like,
I haven't seen that.
I don't know if that was, it was in the Channel 9 papers. I'm not sure if that was like sanctioned or PAPS stuff. I hope it was okay. I looked at it for like 5 seconds and then went, I don't know if I'm meant to be looking at this. And then obviously the memorial is on the 30th. Like I would have gone if I was in Melbourne, but I'm in Darwin. I'm gutted not to be able to go, but I hope it's, I'm sure it will be really fitting and amazing. And, they've named the Great Southern Stand after him. So there's a little bit of consternation over the process of doing that and how quickly they've done it, and kind of maybe, mobilizing or weaponizing a little bit of like some decisions in a period of grief. But I don't think anybody is questioning the appropriateness of the call. It's going to be awesome. And I think I heard the family has asked that it not be named the SK Warne Stand, but it's the Shane Warne Stand, which is cool. I think that's cool too. So
The Women's World Cup rolls on. Australia just doing great things, chasing records now. Run chase against India the other night. Meg Lanning, 97, good gear. Captain runs, batting three stuff. Yes. Australia's 17th successful run chase in a row, Pez. bit, you know, tournament stuff like that. Five from five now. There's now three teams vying for fourth. New Zealand, India, and South Africa have all lost three games of their five. And then South Africa is second. They've won four out of four. And yeah, India's third. But yeah, it's tournament stuff is I still fancy India always giving Australia a game, given what they did in that series just before, where they broke the streak of Australia's one-day international wins in a row. Close game here. They chased 277 in the end. Australia with three balls to spare, I think. I think Beth Mooney came in the end. They got 30 off 20. It's on in front of me, but I think that was Moon's 30 off 20 after she spoke to the great cricketer Sam Perry last week. Obviously inspiration, no doubt. But tournament play, mate, like they can roll into the finals. They're already into the semi-finals now. They've got to play two more games. I think they play seven games. Yeah, there's eight teams in it, so seven games. But, you know, it looks good. It looks good for Australia.
Yeah, but, you know, they've missed an opportunity to have the loss they had to have.
I see.
You know, which is necessary in any tournament across any sport. Or if you're on a big winning streak ahead of a finals knockout series, there's a loss you had to have or have to have.
Of course.
Apparently, I don't write the rules. It's just that's in the rules. They instead just managed a world record chase. And it was on early as well. Elisa Healy was killing it. Haynes going with her. Lanning. It's boring. I actually like every time I watch Meg Lanning, like she doesn't score 100, but she scored like 14 in ODI cricket. I just, you know, so I'm actually feeling a little bit gypped there that she was out for 97, not giving me everything that I want.
Right. Okay.
In one go. But yeah, I mean, they look incredible, Australia. England's still in it, aren't they? I noticed they sort of jammed themselves a win recently. They lost their first three.
Then they beat India.
They're hovering around. Yeah, they're still hovering. I don't know. What do? You just got to play and then hope to play well in the semis in the final. That's what you got to do.
I think Australia's got to play Bangladesh and South Africa. Those are the last two games. South Africa's the only other team on 100% record. I mean, it doesn't matter either way because they're going to finish top. So then they'll play fourth. Is that how it works? Yeah. There's three teams who can come fourth at the moment. It's England, New Zealand, and India. And all three of those teams are pretty good, or at least have good players. But doesn't matter because Australia's got the best team ever. Actually, Australia does have the best team ever. This actually might be the best ever women's team. That's actually, I was being sarcastic at the beginning, but then I was like, no, that's actually probably true. Look at the records they're setting. It's unbelievable.
Well, what about like a game. Player of the match, the first two or three games, Elise Perry, like, you know, is criticised in this game because the slowness of her batting. You know, kind of cost him a bit. It's 24 or 50 rocks or something. So it actually stood out a little bit. Creates question. Like Beth Mooney, as sort of noted on the interview last week, she's out once in five digs. Just ending on 23, not out, 30, not out. Just heaps of not outs in the 20s and the 30s. And is that good? Is that a good thing? That, like, does that mean it's working? Or does it mean that she should be higher up the order? I've got a feeling that they're going to need her at some point. You know, it's not all going to go to plan and she might have a longer innings there at number five. And I'm sure Elise Perry will be fine too. I'm sure she'll be fine.
I'm sure Australia's one of Australia's greatest ever athletes is going to be okay at some point. West Indies and England's pairs, a second test just finished this morning our time. Another exhilarating draw. This was an absolute run, gluttonous deluxe fest.
Yes,
that's why I'm not in charge of naming festivals. if someone wants to mock up a festival poster for that, like someone did last week for what was it? Pure Gloves.
Pure Gloves. Yeah.
Pure Gloves. That was very good.
I'm glad they did that. Not Black Gloves Matter.
runs galore for more runs for Root. Ben Stokes, first Test 100 in a while. Hitting clean balls, and Braithwaite and Blackwood did the business for the West Indies as well. And then Braithwaite's got another 50 in the fourth innings as well to sort of save the game, because England gave the West Indies like 65 overs to bat on the final day. They lost five wickets. They were about five for about 100, I think, maybe a little bit less, or 100 for five rather. And then but Braithwaite saw them home. So I think Braithwaite got about 250 runs in the game. Not bad. But mate, Joe Root, more runs. We spoke about him on last week's show. I got to say, like, Stokes coming in there at five and scoring runs, We didn't see him at the Ashes really. I mean, he was underdone. I think he got 150, maybe he got 250s in the Ashes. His runs and how important he is for English cricket is just, he seems important, you know. But it's also just like, you know how people say, like, when the West Indies are playing well, that's good for cricket. When Pakistan are doing well, it's good for cricket. These things are true as well. But I just feel like if Ben Stokes is scoring runs in particular, because he always does something with the ball, it just feels like it's a good thing for the game of cricket. Is that too big?
No. I mean, he's an absolute weapon in the good sense. He's the best player in the world on his day. You know, he's incredible, Ben Stokes. Great to see him play well. Always entertaining. Fucking heart of a lion, hits the deck hard, smashes it, great fielder. He's one of the best, you know. He's probably is the best in world cricket, to be honest. And I will be honest, that six, he hit a six, that 1-6 where he just was almost off his feet, you know. He like literally transferred his weight between his feet to go over the top. It's incredible shit. And I'm really, it's always good to see Ben Stokes go well. And I was just going to say, mate, like, with Brathwaite, 11 hours for 160 in the first innings, and then, 246 minutes for his unbeaten 50 this time. And
right,
I think I saw a tweet saying that his mum came to watch him for the first time. And, you know, we normally sort of say, well, when your dad comes, you fail, obviously. And then your dad, who's there to watch you ostensibly, doesn't look like he's watching you, and it's a whole sort of, you know, father-son dance. But maybe we need to talk more about mum stuff. You know,
maybe
the mum stuff is the secret to success in cricket. So his mum comes and watches him because, yeah, I'm going to bat for a long time in front of you, mama. I don't know if he calls her mama. It just sort of came out. 673 balls, he goes. The most balls any West Indies batter's faced across a test. Is that Equinox stuff? I don't know, but it actually is the autumnal equinox today, 2:21 a.m. So.
Wait. He faced the most balls ever in a test match for a West Indian player.
For a West Indies, across a test. So not in an innings, it was Lara.
Yeah.
But across a test. Yeah. 673 rocks, just having a stick there.
I got to tell you, if it had one more caveat, like if it was like West Indies opener, then I'd be like, no, I'm not having that anymore.
It's the all-time equinox today.
Yeah, most ever in a test. That's significant. I like that stuff.
For a West Indian across two innings. So he's had to combine two innings.
Yeah.
You happy with it?
Yeah, but if it had one more.
I think you're right. I think it's a good stat. It's a good stat. Just. Dan Lawrence, 91 and 41. Look, everyone's scoring runs, you know. This is the thing. Like Dan Lawrence, 91 and 41. That's good. Just it gets diluted a bit when like heaps of coats are making runs.
Yeah, I know, yeah. When I saw England got 500 in the first innings, now we know England's issues with scoring first innings runs, I was thinking like, this must be pretty fat.
What about, like, I saw another tweet where there was a bit of rabble-rousing, like, you know, if England batted it out later in the innings, would the reports be that England was resilient? Because when West Indies batted out, most of the reports are that the deck is, you know, fucking flat. So, you know, is there a bias there? Probably, 100%.
Yeah, of course there is, yes.
You know?
I don't know why I even paused there for a second.
It's the same in the Australia-Pakistan test. When Pakistan did it, deck shit. If Australia did it, mate, Khawaja, UAE. Yeah, really good stuff.
I know we said this at the on last week's show, which was only a few days ago, but root for me is the best batter in the world at the moment by a distance. Like, just like the sheer weight of runs he's putting on the board at the moment. Two more hundreds in this series, 150 in this innings, right? I know he didn't get the hundreds in the Ashes, which is what we said last week, but I mean, he got close a couple of times. I don't know anyone else who's doing this away from home as well. Given as well what's happening with Kohli, no runs for ages. Smith's done okay in this series. But no 100 for a little while as well. Kane Williamson, Kay, hasn't played in a minute. And then Marnus is the number one bat, but not for me, he's not. But yeah, Joe Root is the best by a distance for me at the moment. What are your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts about what I just said?
Well, maybe give Khawaja a bit of a chance on the world circuit. He's got runs at home against England. He's got them away in Pakistan. Sure. See how he goes in England. I mean, it's usually not that great. No, I think you're yeah. right, man. I think you're right. I mean, you know, we're not talking about three format, are we? We're talking about Test cricket. I don't really give a fuck about any of this, like, who's the best at the moment. Like, it's just match-up shit. How many games do you win?
Yeah.
How many times do you bat to win the game for your team? That's the only thing, and it's not really Root's fault, but, like, that's the charge against Root. And, I'm all about runs against the best players and the best teams, you know. Like, it's not to take away from Joe Root. I think all of the, like, who's the best going around at the moment, it's probably Root. Root's consistently scoring runs. That's really good shit, but... I get more excited with players who make runs like against the odds, under pressure, against really good attacks that help their team. You know, I know he does those things. He probably is the best stick if you're just looking in the nets and guys looking good. Good, yeah, Root's good.
Okay, well, what about your top five left-handed openers who were born in August? Go.
All right, Bill Laurie. Arthur Morris, my mate Nathan Ball, sort of opening a couple of ones games in one days. Who else? Ganguly opened for a bit, so Dada. I've got to say that. I think he opened a couple of one days there. Who else? My uncle Andrew in the backyard.
Wow, no Langer or Hayden. Very interesting. Yeah. Although I suppose they went by in August, which was the main caveat of that. England's bowling stocks get weirder and weirder. And Mark Wood with his elbow, he's got his little elbow injury there. he's now out for luck now. We're talking about the IPL now. There's been a few squad changes. Obviously Aaron Finch is in KKR, which is Pat Cummins' team. Moeen Ali still waiting for clearance to play. Do you know more about this?
No, other than he's just waiting for clearance, but I mean, he played last year, so I'm going to guess he'll be there. He's a fair bit invested in Moeen Ali. I'm sure they'll get it done.
Yeah, he's a pretty handy player. Faf is going to be the new RCB captain. There was the announcement of that last week as well. That's obviously Virat Kohli's franchise. And Virat has stepped down as captain as of last year. So now Virat doesn't captain any teams. He doesn't captain any teams anymore, does he? No, because he's not doing any white ball stuff, and he's not the test captain, and he's not the RCB captain. So he's not captaining any teams anymore.
It's so strange to me, man. Anyway,
that's weird.
We've already done the interview with Adam Zampa. You'll hear it. He has like lovely things to say about Kohli. Didn't get from his time at RCB. We've talked to a few people about Kohli, and he actually seems like a good level guy that everybody respects, you know, like you never hear anything bad about him. It's strange to me that like he's in a scenario now where he's got no leadership across any team. Not saying he's like, not saying he's fucking JFK of leadership, you know, necessarily, but like he's pretty decent, you know, and he's obviously huge profile. But anyway,
I find that really interesting. I was thinking about Kohli yesterday, as is my wont. I was just kind of wondering like where his legacy will exist now, because I've said this so many times, but I just felt like he was in like a legacy stage of his career where he just wanted to win heaps of shit and become like as big as what Dhoni appears to be in India, just you know, as an observation, or you know, and I don't know if he'll reach the Tendulkar levels of adulation where, but I mean Kohli's going to win so much stuff in his career, and like they've got the 50 over World Cup. The men's 50 over World Cup is next year in India. I think he really wanted to captain that team. They didn't win the World Test Championship final against New Zealand, where he was captain there. He's never won the IPL at RCB, where he's been captain for so many years. And he hasn't scored runs in so long, like big bulk Kohli runs, which is a transportation company that I'm setting up at the moment. And I just sort of wonder like where it's going with him. You know, I'm sure the big bulk runs are coming. You know, from again, like he's too good a player for that to not happen, and to get the hundreds and all that stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I felt like he was on this trajectory where he was gonna reach like maybe one of India's greatest players of all time. And instead, I feel like it's only going to, well, he was just the best player of a generation. You know what I mean? Like, still pretty good. But I feel like it was just going somewhere that I don't see it going anymore.
Yeah, I mean, he was on track to have the perfect career. Like,
yeah,
I think he probably, in India, he's already one of the greatest players of all time. But, like, I know what you mean. Like, it's a little bit of a, it's a rung down to be stripped of the captaincy, you know, a couple of times. I mean, that, you know, that said, like, it happened to Ponting. And it doesn't seem to impact like people's thoughts on his legacy. Like nobody goes, oh, well, he did lose a captaincy there for a bit. It happened to Sir Garfield Sobers as well. Like these are people who are regarded as the greats. Like, I mean, the thing missing from Kohli at the moment is the bulk runs. Like that's what the thing thrives off. That's the energy source. And, you know, I'm backing him to bring it back.
Mm. All right. Well, do you want to let the people know, Pez, about our IPL coverage, which starts, the IPL starts next week?
Man, the IPL starts on Saturday, brother. Saturday night. And, yeah, we're going big, bigger than last year. Three reviews per week. Watto's wrap. We've got a comedy show to debut. We're going to have heaps of interviews with players, heaps of people from in and around the IPL. There's going to be a lot of recording. I'm not going to say something every day, but just about. And we'll have a preview of the IPL later on this week for those who care about that, coming out exclusively to our YouTube channel. So, you know, all the people who sledge us on Reddit, get ready.
We were very fortunate to speak to our dear friend of the show, Adam Zampa, who has now been on this podcast, I want to say three times, but it might be more than that because we've done so many other things with like Channel 7 and whatever else. But before then, we've got to thank our dear sponsors, Budgie Smuggler, because as you know, that this show is presented to you by Custom Swimwear by Budgie Smuggler, all made in Australia. And Pez, I was just thinking about the World Cup. I was thinking about the World Cup, the Women's World Cup, and I was just thinking, you know, it's on. It's on for another trophy here for the Australian cricket team.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that it's on. It's unbeatable. And this is going to play out poorly next week when we lose to Namibia, who aren't even in the tournament. But that is going to be quite a shock. But I was thinking about a mural of just the all-time great Australian victories. People holding up silverware, all sports. I'm thinking John Eales. I'm thinking Warne on the balcony. I'm thinking Steve Waugh in a motor car down George Street in Sydney, where they used to have, you know, ticker tape parades. No more ticker tape parades. Yeah. Not since COVID. When was the last ticker tape parade?
Yeah, it's a good question, mate. Like, I went to school in the city. So, like, we were around for ticker tape parades. I reckon there might have been one, like, for the 2004 Olympics in Athens. There might have been some ticker tape parade stuff. I seem to recall Grant Hackett, a bald Grant Hackett with Oakleys on, standing in some kind of car or other, you know, gold medal glistening. That was a good medal too. I mean, you know, of all the gold medals, sort of ranking them. So that's the last one I can remember. I feel like it's on. There's probably been some since, you know, but that's the last one I remember. It doesn't seem to be in vogue as much anymore.
I don't remember the 2004 one. I'm thinking like I remember the 1999 World Cup one, like the cricket World Cup one. I was 99 was a great time to be alive as a young person who supports the Australian sporting, network.
It was the peak
where
of
we just won everything. Hockey, rugby league, rugby
union.
The whole new century
has been dystopia. I mean, the Sydney Olympics happened and that's it. Everything's downhill. Yeah. Okay, we knocked over the British Lions with Rod McQueen in 01. You know, I hear people saying that. Knocked them over. But it's Austin Healey doing impressions of Lou. From Neighbours. One of the reasons I came was to see Lou and Toadfish. Wait, that's Sean Connery. Yeah, anyway. Everything since has been a disappointment. Everything peaked in 1999. And I think 1999 was probably when, you know, it was sort of known as a former, like another company's name, but really budgie smugglers were in vogue. And I just want to say again, I am dressed by a budgie today. We've got the hat today. They do accessories and all that kind of gear. You want to put mural stuff on budgies on your custom designs. I've been thinking about, placid pictures, roads, highways, and I'm thinking about the world's best roads that you might want to... You want to place the world's best roads on your custom design. I'm thinking, Chapman's Peak Drive, South Africa. You know, I'm thinking, Route 1, Iceland, which is not to be confused with Burnley's approach in the Premier League. I'm thinking the Amalfi Drive in Italy. You know, even in Australia, the Great Ocean Road.
Oh yeah,
or just Junction Oval, another road.
Mate, what about the Carl Expressway in Sydney? And then when the Socceroos play in the World Cup, it's the Tim Cahill Expressway. it just reminds me of when we get our athletes dressed up in their playing gear and we put them into concrete jungles, or we just put them in, we place them out of context of the sporting arena, but we have to recognize them. So we got to put them in their playing jerseys.
Yes.
I remember a photo of, it was Smith, Zampa and Khawaja in Times Square in New York in like the bright yellow ODI kit. And I was like, why do we need to do this to these people? I don't understand. Tim Cahill in his Socceroos jersey standing next to the Carl Expressway sign. I don't know why we do that. But that's just an idea.
Another stellar endorsement of Budgie Smuggler. Get your custom designs at budgiesmuggler.com.au, all sorts of other accessories as well. Use the code CHAMP, see what happens. It's at budgiesmuggler.com.au.
Here's Adam Zampa.
Welcome to the Grade Cricketer.
I make dick jokes on the internet. Bush horse. Bush horse. Bush horse. Bush horse. Bush horse. Fuck. The elite bush horse. Bush horse. Bush horse. Just truffling. It's the least intimidating noise. Sex. Where the bush horse. Bush horse. Bush horse.
Pumping, pumping.
Where the bush horse. Bush horse. Bush horse. Just truffling. Fuck the bush horse. Bush horse. Bush horse. Josh Hazlewood is an elite bush horse.
Pumping
where?
Safety. Pumping
where?
Aggression. Pumping
where? An elite bush horse. Josh Hazlewood. Fuck.
Funk Master Flex. Toss Master Finch. Toss Master Finch. Toss Master. Toss Master Finch. Pumping
where? Josh Hazlewood. An elite bush horse. Bush horse. Fuck. The bush horse. Bush horse.
Bush horse. Demolition job stuff.
Bush horse. Bush horse. Sex. 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 Just sex. 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 Bush horse. Bush horse. Bush horse.
Who hasn't fucking cleaned the stables?
That'll do, boys.
Well, it's the third or fourth appearance on the show from this man, one of the dearest friends of the show. You may even recognize his voice from the intro title with one of the most prophetic and profound comments about grade cricket, and I'll leave it to the audience to work out which one that is. I'm talking about Adam Zampa, Zorba, the spin extraordinaire of the T20 World Cup victory, also plays for Sutherland, I think. Adam Zampa, welcome.
Thanks, mate. How are you guys? You good?
We're very good. Yeah. I just noticed off air, Zorby.
I have to comment there. I love how we always start off with how are you, even though I've been talking to you guys for half an hour before the show started.
We've got to be a better way to faces on. Yeah.
There has to be a better way to do it. Anyway, let's play on. We've been talking for half an hour. Let's do the podcast now.
Well, I didn't mention this off air, if you want this to be fully authentic, but you organized, you fixed a coffee for yourself before commencing. I did too. Mine's out of the plunger, and you were like weighing some shit on scales and stuff. Like, it seems lately, mate, that, and this is obviously very important in Australian cricket, that coffee, I thought the sort of the gourmet or artisanal coffee movement was created by you in the current Australian cricket team, but it seems to be the domain of Manus Labuschagne now. And I just want to know, as a 36-year-old male who concerns himself with world affairs, how that sits with you?
It depends how you want to see yourself, I guess. Like, do you want to be the pioneer or do you want to be the sheep? I could kind of leave it there, but I'm a pioneer, mate. I started the movement. I'll continue to do the movement in the background without putting it in too many people's faces. But yeah, I mean, it's nice. If you don't have any followers, you're not a leader. Cheers to that.
Hey, cheers.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
I think I heard a lot of anti-vaxxers say the same thing. So but I want to know when your last grade game was. Do you even have a club at the moment?
It's a very good question. I last played a grade game for East Torrens Cricket Club, mm-hmm. probably 3.5 years ago, above medium pace.
Also like okay. Manus.
Also like Manus.
It's because I could not get any wickets bowling leg spin. I think I toiled for about 20 overs, got one wicket, one leggy, so I started bowling medium pace. And then, yeah, I don't really have a club at the moment. Trying my best to avoid that decision for maybe forever. I got a message last week from someone from Cricket Australia because they've been saying they want to announce the ODI and T20 teams, test teams, and have your club next year, like an under-19s selection. I just haven't gotten around to it.
Because you haven't gotten around to it yet. Because you're a club in Sydney, your original club was Sutherland. And their, I just wanted to know if you still recall their song upon winning a game.
I do, yeah.
Would you provide a rendition?
Ideally, I wouldn't want to do that.
Okay. You should never ask for impressions from people. I apologize.
Ideally.
I find singing hard as it is, but this song, it kind of, I need Luke Dudman to start it.
Yep.
And without Luke Dudman or Joel Tusher or Nathan Fitzgerald next to me, it gets a bit emotional for me.
That's nice you remember the guys' names though. Like your club mates, that would mean a lot to that club. Like what was your role in this song? Because like it's just shark attack, tack, 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 tack. And there's a lot of bin hitting, stumps against concrete walls, toilet block walls. Someone's got to get a bin to get the beat of the tack, 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 tack. What was your role in the song?
I was just that idiot that tried to get people naked.
What sort of tactics would you employ?
Well, just have a shower. People that know the Glenn McGrath Oval change rooms well, I don't know if they've changed in the last 10 years, but they're tiny Crazy. Homes. Yeah, they're cabins. And the shower's pretty close to where Luke Dudman would hit the bins, so I'd be in and out of the shower during the song.
Speaking of cabins, like it gives me the aesthetic of, being up in the hinterland. And I know that one of the things people talk about with you now, whether it's on the TV or otherwise, is, Zorba and his farm. You know, how's the farm up in Byron? You know, on a serious note, there's been some catastrophic floods up there, obviously. And tell us about how the farm's going and also just the response to the floods.
Yeah, it was a life-changing move for me. Like two years ago, I made the decision to move from Adelaide back home. And generally, when guys move, you obviously move to the city. So, like most guys that are playing for New South Wales will try and live in Sydney. But I think my plan was always to have the farm and then go to Sydney as much as I needed to for cricket, whether it be pre-season or go for a few weeks. So, but it's just turned out that basically I live there full time now. We travel so much for cricket that as soon as I get a couple of weeks off, I go there. But yeah, it's been life changing. I absolutely love living up there. I live 5 minutes outside of a small town called Bangalore. And it's just it's a great community. I can see myself living there forever. In terms of the floods, we have a creek that wraps around the property and we're pretty lucky that the creek rose a little bit, took out some fences, some electric fences, which are pretty easy to fix. But, we got out of it pretty lightly compared to some people in Mullumbimby and Lismore.
you moved there. You mentioned you moved there from South Australia, Zorb, and it must have been pretty frustrating, mate, for you, where you're playing for Australia and you're doing good things for the Australian cricket team, but you don't really get much game time for the Redbacks. I mean, there must have been in a time with respect to South Australia where they haven't won a game in 15 years. So that must have been pretty frustrating as a guy who's playing for the Australian team who can't get a game for South Australia.
Yeah, I had seven seasons in South Australia and I'll absolutely have fond memories of that. But yeah, towards the end, things started to get frustrating. I mean, playing every Shield game was important to me, but I think I was playing the ones that I shouldn't have been playing. So if I didn't get picked at the Wacker, for example, I'm not too bothered about that because naturally as a leg spinner, you got about five and over and you get bounced the shit out of when you bat. So I was happy to miss that one, but I was missing games at Adelaide Oval, and which I've got a really good record at. So yeah, it was getting frustrating. And I think 7 years of Adelaide living there in general was just enough as well. So it all combined to a pretty easy decision. Yeah.
I just want to go back to the farm stuff. You're talking about where you're living. Like, I think there was a couple of rain delays in the latest T20 series against Sri Lanka, highly memorable series. And the camera pans to you in the SCG dressing rooms, and like all the banter is like, oh, Zampa's probably talking about his farm, you know. And like, I just look at a guy and I'm like, he lives on a farm. He's got a sustainable lifestyle. He likes it. It works for him. But like in cricket circles, it's like, oh, that's so rare. Oh, he makes his own food and he likes living on a farm. I mean, what is going on with this bloke? You know, he's out of control. This guy, like, look at him. He's just so rare.
Firstly, that's a really, really good point that you make. But I do remember that happening during the T20 series against Sri Lanka, and Ash Agar walked in after his interview. Because he was the one that got asked, he goes, what's everyone talking about in the dressing room? And he said, Zampa's farm. And I go, why did you say that? We're not talking about my farm. Like, we're talking about haircuts and ridiculous shit. We're not talking about my farm at the moment. But he's like, I don't know. I just said your farm.
But do you find, like, among cricketers, like, cricketers obviously well paid these days, like, among them, like, do they find it like sort of, you know, unorthodox that someone has done it the way you want them? And when I think about living up in Byron or something, it sounds quite idyllic, apart from the sort of the new blow-ins, kind of getting, you know, making it difficult for the locals.
As I said to you before, like, people find it a bit weird because most of the guys are living in the capital cities. So, if there's a week off, I'm at home and those guys, you know, generally at home in the city, and they have the access to the facilities and they're probably seeing each other a little bit more. But I think it's nice that people are interested in the sustainability side of things. Like, people, boys do ask about what's going on there next and what my plans are. So it's a nice conversation to have. But it's not rare, but most people that live in that part of the world have property or some sort of project they're working on.
I'm really enjoying the in-depth discussions of like what blokes are talking about in the dressing rooms at club level, like, international level. It's just the same. Just, you're talking about haircuts and race seven at Mooney Valley.
most of the conversation that happens in our change room is about golf. It would take up 95% of every conversation they talk about, like the Royal bloody Campbelltown or bunch Noogles, and like they're doing a golf trip soon to Tassie, and saying they saw one tiger snake there once. It's like basically what what Callaway's and Taylor's they're using next, and it's Scotty Pippen putters.
Are you a golf nuff as well? Have you ever dabbled in that, or like do you know how to hold your own in that conversation? You know, just talking about sort of getting on plane and that kind of gear.
One of the greatest days of my life was playing golf. I had the most fun I've ever had. It was 2 days before the World Cup final. Myself, Ashton Agar, Kane Richardson, and David Beakley, God bless. We had a round of nine holes of golf, me and Ash Agar, finished a bottle of Grand Marnier. I took out a couple of trees and some solar lights, ripped up some gutters, went deep into the night with a few more beers. Not ideal preparation for the World Cup, but it was it's a good memory of mine.
Got the job.
Must have been there.
Yeah.
I mean, you won.
Well, good point. Yeah.
I like that your main memory from the World Cup is playing golf and having a couple of beers with Ashton Agar. That's ripping the main takeaway.
The World Cup would have been a great memory anyway if we didn't win it, but that just topped it off. We had a lot of fun. And that's my memory of golf. I severely try to avoid it in Australia. People tell me, why don't I play? Because the courses are beautiful. But it's like you've got them. I'd rather just go for a coffee or go try a new IPA that I haven't had yet, or go to the ocean, go for a hike. You can go for a walk on in beautiful areas of Australia without having to find your golf ball.
It's one of my favorite things to do on a Sunday. Just get up there in the gutters, just do some guttering. honestly, some of the gutters in parts of like Southern Victoria, honestly, beautiful.
It's a great place for guttering.
It's a great place. That's what they say. If I could ask you a serious question, Zamps, you were one of the first people to leave the IPL last year about 12 months ago when Delta was kicking off and it sort of got into the bubble in the IPL. And I know you were sort of criticized for that at the time, and I'm sure your DMs were very helpful at that time as well. Like what was the decision around, like how easy of a decision was it at that time? Because I mean, it was only about a week later after you and I think Kane Richardson as well left from RCB. And then it got really bad in India, obviously, but you were the sort of the first person to leave.
Yeah, it was myself, Kane, and AJ Tai, actually. He got on a flight 2 days before we got onto one. So, yeah, it was a very interesting time. Like, we don't regret our decision whatsoever. It was obviously, from RCB's point of view, they were pretty disappointed, like some of the things that they told us, about letting down the squad. And, it was a pretty rough fallout with that franchise. That's for sure. Like, don't think I'll ever be playing for RCB again. But, you know, it's hard enough for me to get an IPL gig anyway, let alone getting rid of one team, definitely. So, yeah, I think the decision was easy. Like the fact that, going to the Maldives for a holiday, that when we left, that was like, this is where this could end up. If Australia locked all the citizens out that have been in India, then there's a very good chance we're either going to be stuck here or going somewhere else for a bit before we have to do the 2 weeks quarantine. So Kane and I were like, let's just go home. It was hard enough leaving home at that time. Like every time during COVID and having to do isolation, stepping onto that plane and taking off, you always knew that when you landed back, it was that 2 weeks quarantine. So it was always a hard decision anyway, let alone like back in the day, if Richo or myself wanted to go play IPL and, you know, we had mental health issues or, you know, we got injured, you could be back in your own bed within 20 hours of making that decision. So, yeah, things got a lot harder. So, but when there was 400,000 recorded cases in India, we were like, let's just bite the bullet here. So, yeah, it was a very easy decision. I think, yeah, there, as I said to you before, there was a little bit of fallout. Like, as Kane said in the media a few weeks ago, he reckons that might be one of the reasons why we didn't get picked up again. But anyone with the same mind would have made the same decision that we would. As much as 10 days in the mouth, I've sounds.
We, Higos and I pretty much followed the IPL properly for the first time last season. And if we hadn't, you know, I would have looked at you missing out in the IPL and gone unbelievable. So I'm missing out in the IPL this time around. You're one of the premier white ball spinners in T20 world cricket. But looking at the comp last year and the IPL generally, like that, it seems really difficult for spinners generally to get a gig if you're not from India. How much of not getting picked up this time around do you think is weighted towards the latter, or do you think Kane's right and that it's something to do with the way things fell out last year?
No, Kane's wrong, I think.
sorry, Kane.
Yeah, it's IPL, so if they want Kane Richardson's skill set, then they'll get it. He's pulled out in the past and then got picked up again, so I think there will become a point where it may be a little bit too much, but Kane and I will definitely play IPL again at some stage. It is, for me, it is a little bit more difficult. You're right. Like guys, teams generally, unless you're a mystery spinner or can bat six or seven, it's just really tough to get a gig over guys who are local, who they think can do a pretty similar job. Although, you know, records say that they won't do a similar job. But that's just how they make up their team. They want to spend the money on the quicks, the all-rounders. You know, even top-order batsmen don't really make a lot of money in that competition because there's so many of them over there as well. So, yeah, if you're a fast bowler or an all-rounder, that seems to be what they want, what you attract.
Obviously, at ICB, I mean, Virat isn't the captain anymore, Faf is, but he was captain when you were there. And what sort of like it struck me that it was so important for him to win the IPL, you know, part of Virat's legacy. You know, did you observe the kind of pressure that he put on himself as captain?
No, didn't observe it at all. He was the same guy the whole time. Nothing ever got like bad games never affected him. Not scoring runs didn't affect him. I think he's got a pretty broad view of like his game and failures and success. Like I don't think he really rides himself as hard as he does train and as good as he is. Like I think he sees cricket for what it is. I think he knows how important his role is in it. Like obviously he's so big over there, but I never really felt like the IPL was like winning the IPL or whatever was the be all and end all. As much as, you know, he obviously loves that franchise. It's like, you know, it's probably similar with the Stars. You know, we haven't won it yet and we're probably feeling that pressure to win it too. But, you know, if I play there for the next 8 years and we don't win it, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. It's just, I love that club as well, but it's just, I don't know. Maybe we will win it, maybe we won't. But once I'm done with cricket, I probably won't think about it too much.
Well, it's funny you say that, mate. Like, I should probably break this up into two questions, but I'll just talk. Like, when you say something like that, like, I know how much you love playing for the Stars. Like, you love playing for the Stars more than many people would understand, probably. It's you're very loyal to them and you really want to win with them. But what you also say, if we don't win, I'm not going to lose sleep over it.
there's a lot of people from former generations who would hear something like that and go, oh, he's not going to lose sleep over it. He mustn't care that much. You know, the only way to show you care about something is literally to, you know, have sleep deprivation over it or similar things like that, you know. And I look at, say, the T20 World Cup win, where guys like you and Stoinis and Agar, like Richardson, like the Wade almost seem to be brought into that clique. Like the white ball guys seem to bring a real fearlessness and happiness to the team that took it to a new level. It seemed, you seem to be playing in a way that we're not used to as Australian fans, you know, like we're used to everything being, you know, we play well and we're aggressive, but we're very serious and we take losses hard and, you know, we struggle to shake hands after the game and stuff, but you guys don't seem to have a bit different attitude to that. Would that be right?
Yeah, definitely. I think our attitude towards it has changed since this group has been together consistently now for, like, I think the last 12 months in particular, we've made a conscious effort to just be like, you know what, fuck it, let's just have fun. Like, we went into that World Cup and we said, who cares what happens? Let's just have the most amazing time. Let's drink beers together. Let's play golf. Let's crash carts.
The big three.
Yeah. Yeah. The big three.
Beers, golf, carts.
Carts. Carts, beers and darts. So, yeah, like I'm obviously not a part of that test group, and I think you kind of get the feel by watching that they need our injection over there now. They need a bit of white ball energy, so that's what we're doing. We're going over there. We're going to go support the lads in the last test towards the end. But yeah, like we're just really having a good time. We're all good mates, and that's what matters. As I said to you before, like, the World Cup would have been a great memory for me, even if we had lost, although it was a lot fucking better that we won. but, yeah, it's a really good team to be part of. It's the same as the Stars. Like, as I said to you, like, I just want to have a good time, be around mates, and if we win, then it's a bonus. But that's definitely my attitude towards this whole thing. It's the same as even the baggy green, mate, like, you know, the baggy green culture, the getting that baggy green, how, you know, do you want it? Do you want it enough? It's like, I might get it one day, but, you know, Mitch Swepson's in the team now and I'm very happy for him because he's a good mate of mine. So I'm not going to hope that he doesn't get wickets and that one day I get the baggy green. So, If I end up playing 250, 300 games for Australia and make good money out of it and I don't end up with a bag of green at the end of it, I'll be okay.
It's like the same with me and my mates on a Saturday. Just get that baggy. Just get the baggy.
and you know, if I don't get it, I actually am going to get some sleep.
I was going to ask you, did you guys, like, how written off did you guys feel like coming into the World Cup? Did you, do you guys feel like, because the results before the World Cup had Bangladesh, West Indies tours, no good over there. And everyone was a bit like, can't see it happening. And I was like that as well. I couldn't see us winning the thing, winning a couple of tosses, didn't miss. But did you guys feel written off?
There was ebbs and flows even during the World Cup. Like, obviously the England game, we got absolutely pounded. It ruined our rate so much that we were like, God, we're fucked here. We're going to need a miracle.
Yeah.
And then we got the wood over Bangladesh in the big win and we were like, all right, we're on here. We'll be okay. We'll make the semis. And then it was a really tough World Cup. We were in a tough group, the group of death, they were calling it. Like, we played West Indies in the last game and beat them very well, but they're one of those teams that, you know, if you don't start well against them, they're going to get a big score. And it was an interesting World Cup. We felt written off, hence why I always came out with a kept the receipts because I was actually writing stuff down saying, fuck these guys. I had it written down on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And I lead the team song in the white ball group. So, it was a nice way to kind of kick things off before we sang the team song. Got the boys pumped up a bit, actually.
Fuck.
I'm afraid now. I wouldn't say we wrote you off, but just sort of thought, well, you know, teams like 4 or 5. And there's a couple other good teams, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, we're in a voodoo doll.
Go
on.
Absolutely no. It's more ex players that irk us. Not the Great Cricketer podcast.
No, to laugh at that. I mean,
no disrespect, because
we know
you're one of us.
No.
I mean, Pez and I used to play as well, so we sort of.
Yeah, I did play. Players.
Play.
Yeah, but you don't have the bag of green, mate. So it doesn't matter.
Well, our team's cap was black.
Yeah.
What you think to us doesn't matter because you didn't wear the baggy green.
How many fucking tests have you played? Yeah,
that's just get to the point.
Yeah.
So, but when you we're recording this on Monday morning for those listening, and so the test starts later this afternoon Australia time. And I didn't know that. You guys are going to go over and you're going to be there supporting, kind of like a grade club finishing a game, saying let's go down and support the twos. You know, obviously the test team is the twos from a white ball perspective. Like, how do you manifest that support? You're like, bring a case, sit in the stands.
Apparently they do. They have a hill ready for us with a blanket, some fold out chairs and a little esky. So they've actually got that roped off.
Roped off, velvet rope. Obviously you can't bring a case. It was Pakistan, but.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's the plan, mate.
That's great. That would actually be awesome if you were in the crowd supporting, but I know that's impossible. I mean, there's been so much written and said about how much security there is over there. I was going to ask if when we talked to Finchie last week, and I think we just read a report that he hadn't heard yet that there was a bit of security consternation heading over there because Imran, something going on with Imran Khan or something, who was a good player. And they've moved the games now to Lahore or away from Lahore. Have you guys had a briefing on that? How are you feeling heading over there?
We're in Lahore now. We were meant to be right in Rawalpindi. There was some protesting that was too close to the hotel. Right. So they've changed it to Lahore. Yeah. I mean, I did have some concerns about going. Obviously, I spoke to someone like Stephen Fleming who had a really rough time over there when they last toured, and he was like, yeah, I don't know, mate. Like, it's very personal. I think the fact that the security is so strong makes it an easier decision. I don't know. I feel pretty good about going. It's a nice short trip as well. Be good. Minus has his coffee machine over there, so it would be sweet.
dad life around the corner for you, Zorbs. What kind of dad is Adam Zampa going to be? Throwdowns at the Nets, you know, driving to away games, or you know, whiskey bars once they turn 18.
I'll probably whiskey bars. I'll take him to Soho and meet Tom Hardy.
It's a bit of time between now and then, believe me.
Let's get back to this Tom Hardy story at one stage, because I got a DM from someone on Instagram last year about my comments on Tom Hardy and how disrespectful it was because he's had a drinking problem. Because he said, mate, I've seen your thing with the Great Cricketer about catching up with Tom Hardy. It's not very funny. He's actually had a drinking problem for a long time. So, you know, you've got to be careful what you say. And I was like, right, mate, didn't happen. It was very obvious that it didn't happen. No disrespect to Tom Hardy. I hope he gets through this issue. But I actually didn't catch up with him in Soho. As hard as that is to believe, it didn't happen, mate, and it was a joke. So, yeah, anyway.
Sure,
back to me being a dad. I'll be... Yeah, I don't know. You can imagine what he'll look like. He'll be short and probably fat. He'll grow his hair long, and I'll probably be one of those dads that just gives it the haircut across the fringe there. Very like bamboo-y, linen-y clothes, barefoot.
Bamboo-y.
Linen-y.
Linen-y, hanky, you know. You can imagine.
That's good, man. That's good. Got some visions there. obviously, a couple of weeks ago, the King passed away, and we were talking about. I mean, look, I don't know how long people are going to, you know, be talking about Warn in this phase straight after he's died, but he just meant a lot to a lot of people. You don't want to kind of overdo the grief on it, but I just felt like especially for a leg spinner like yourself, there's like, so you know, one of the main lines that's come out of like Warren's death is how many people say we all wanted to be like him, and it occurred to me that someone like you probably got as close as anybody to being like him. I can see a little bit of his action in yours, but also most people try and bowl leg spin and then realize what a stupid art it is and how hard it is. But you actually, I'm sure he was a hero of yours, and you actually have gone and done it and played for Australia. So just some reflections on Warn and, what the last couple of weeks have meant to you.
Yeah, it was a bit of obviously it's a really, really sad couple of weeks. I woke up that day and read the news, and it didn't really hit me, I guess. You know, I read about it and I was talking to blokes about it and going, you know, that's sad, because I know it's sad, but it didn't hit me until that afternoon. And I was sitting there on my deck having a beer and going, like, fuck. I probably wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if it wasn't for him. Like, he was the guy that when I decided to buy leg spin at 13 or 14 that I absolutely looked up to. Like, I got the opportunity to bowl with him when I was, I think, 6 months after I decided to buy leg spin. Amazing. Like, it was such an amazing experience meeting him. Like, he's the absolute king. Like, I remember just being in awe of him. Like, his body was built differently, his hands, and you were like, whoa, man. He picked up the ball and he's like, he hadn't bowled in, let's say, I think it was like a year or 2 years. And he went, whoa, let's see how this goes. And I don't know if you guys know, but anyone that's listening to the Grade Cricket podcast should know Mick Mudguts McLennan.
Thanks for calling it the Grade Cricket podcast. As
well. If you're listening, you should. Some of you will know Mudguts McLennan. Great, one of the great men of Grade Cricket. Played for Eastern Suburbs. He was actually down in the net. He was like, oh, "I'll face your warning." Warning goes, "Yeah, all right, I'll roll a couple out." His first ball genuinely drifted outside leg, and Mudguts spun past Mudguts, and he missed it by about a foot. And it was like, this bloke can't do wrong. Like, I was like, he's the king for a reason. Anyway, that afternoon, I remembered a few of those memories. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if it wasn't for him. I absolutely looked up to him. I was trying to reflect on our relationship in the last couple of years, and like, just, it was probably one of those things with him where I was kind of in my zone. He was doing what he was doing. And I always thought that I would connect with him maybe later. Like, we'd always say hello at the ground. Like, he said hello to me in that Sri Lanka series, and I said, hey, like, probably regret not going up and talking to him because I was in a bit of a, like a, you know, a fuck the past players kind of mood, still talking shit about us. So, yeah, I have some regrets there. Like, I probably should have just saw past that and went and said g'day. But, yeah, with Warnie, I always just thought he was someone that I would connect with a little bit more later. But, yeah, he finally came around to me as well. I think for a couple of years he thought I was no good, and then the last couple of years he started talking me up. So, yeah. Yeah, it's sad, mate. Like, I absolutely looked up to him. He's, you know, him, McGill, a couple of my heroes growing up.
Nice one. Zorba, I think you've got to go to training. You're not aware of that, but you've got to go to the Junction Oval. So,
it's fine, mate.
They sort of contact us, and then we contact the players to tell them what time training is. And we sort of get them on a Zoom beforehand, have a chat. And
thanks so much for the chat, mate. All the best in Pakistan. More importantly, all the best with some time off after and dad life after that. All the best to you and Harriet with that. I was going to say that pursuit. Yeah, that is what it is, actually. thanks for joining us again, mate. You're always very generous to us.
No worries, guys. You're both glowing. Lovely to see you. And shout out to Mudguts McLennan. Hope he's listening.
Thank you very much to Zamps, Pez, hashtag RCDC's around the corner. We've got to thank our sponsors, Manscaped. Manscaped.com. Use the code TGC. For 20% off and free shipping. That's a fucking sweet deal. 20% off and free shipping. Not bad. Pez, scaping is, you know, we talked about this the other day, like when I took my Lawnmower 3.0 around the world with me. Presentation key at all times. You're going to be away for a few weeks from home. You got to keep that shit presentable. You got to keep your shit presentable. No matter where you are, it's good for Instagram.
Is it? Yeah. When I've seen a couple of Insta shots of you overseas, and you're looking good, obviously. And thanks. You were supported by Manscaped there, were you? Not a paid promotion, but obviously Manscaped.
That wasn't a paid promotion. The armor. I should have tagged him in. I should have tagged him in. I didn't post many pictures of my penis on Instagram. Not this time.
Oh.
That was for sort of OnlyFans gear. Use the code TGC for the OnlyFans code.
Fuck.
I
didn't realize TGC was being co-opted for your OnlyFans bush.
Yeah, for the OnlyFans bush, yeah. we were talking last week about the accessories that Manscaped got, and we were talking about it's like the deodorant, like the scented deodorant that they have. And I was thinking how scent is an underrated attraction. Scent is an underrated attraction.
Oh, you think it's I think it's highly rated. Sense everything. Yeah. Not everything, not exactly everything, but it's a lot of things. Do you remember, I mean, they may still even be around. A lot of people remember this. Like, you go into a bathroom at a pub, you know, circuit Friday night, Saturday night, and there'd be these like metal vending machines called Wipe On Sex Appeal.
Yeah,
you could purchase it for a matter of dollars. I don't know how much because I never did it myself. But I love the idea that you just get it and you go, I am going to wipe on sex appeal from a metal vending machine. Like, I mean, imagine
I'm
that
pheromones you all over my body.
Hey, you know, you got people who are trying to do self improvement via tertiary education, self help books, spiritual enlightenment.
That's right.
You know, they educate themselves. They engage in moral pursuits. Maybe they go to church. Maybe they've got a great familial and friendship network around them, good communities, and they invest in these things. And actually, you know, all of these are for biological reproduction reasons. And actually, you could just go to a pub and get Wipe On Sex Appeal for $1 and you too could reproduce.
Mate, I played a game. I played a game at Chatswood Oval, was my club's home ground back in Sydney, and had some drinks with the boys afterwards at this bar called Chelsea. It was Chelsea Bar in Chatswood. And I would have been early 20s. Can't remember exactly how old I was. But I was getting pretty tipsy, drink responsibly, and I went to the bathroom and purchased some Wipe On Sex Appeal from the bathrooms. And then I was already inebriated. And then I wiped it all over my neck and then put the wipe on sex appeal in my drink and then drank the drink. And it's honestly the drunkest I've ever been in my entire life, or at least top five. Yeah, absolutely blitzed. I would not recommend doing that.
So I understand.
Please.
You wiped presumably like a moist kind of cotton
That's
material
right.
over your neck. And did yes. you, are you saying you put the remaining liquid from the packet into your drink, or you actually put the cotton wipe into
I
your
I put
drink?
The cotton wipe into the drink.
And you're saying it got
it's just
you,
alcohol.
Mr. Speaker. Right, I was going to say, like, were you so blitzed that you did it, or you became very drunk because you put this alcohol-based solution into your drink?
Well, my memory, which remains hazy to this day, is that it was because of the alcohol, the acidity of the alcohol in the wipe that was then in my drink. But if I'm doing that, I was already pretty pissed. So
pretty pissed,
like, you know. Which one?
And
which
was
one
it was a bit of a
other.
Trick for your friends as well?
Yeah, like, it was. Yeah, it was out. Just some. It was just some dumb shit for the boys, you know. And you know, got a laugh. That's all I wanted. That's all
Do
I wanted.
Do you believe that your that you did manage to wipe on increased sex appeal?
The fact that I couldn't talk afterwards, I think I sort of negated any pheromonal attraction that I was exuding because I had just wiped on sex appeal onto my body.
Yeah.
But the fact
but
that
someone may
talk.
Have thought, yeah, they may have thought, look, this guy can't talk. However, the pheromones he's exuding do compensate somewhat.
What is that, lavender?
Have you wiped on some sex appeal there?
Let me tell you, I am very appealed for sex with you.
I guess the point is that scent is critical, and the Ultra Premium Collection is the ultimate wet goods bundle. Wet goods. Hey, you want to buy some wet goods? It includes deodorant, actual armpit deodorant, body wash, 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner, hydrating body spray. Hey, Kyle, I didn't get the hydrating body spray. Anyway, and the package comes with a free set of Manscaped lip balm. Also, when you get this stuff from Manscaped, they actually give you different options for the read. Like there's a male host, female host, and PG. So I always click male host, just trying to, you know, do this with integrity, but maybe there's another option there down the track. That's a Manscaped Ultra Premium Collection for all your wet goods. Use the code TGC, you're going to get 20% off, and it's going to help your scent.
And don't do what I did. Don't do what I did ever. Hashtag AskTGC. Alex Powell wrote in, he said, boys, was looking for some kind of explanation of Elise Perry's suspected alpha exploits over at the World Cup. During Australia's win over New Zealand, and indeed for most of the tournament, Perry has batted with a stick covered in red cherries. Alex continues, is this Perry saying to the rest of the women's cricketing world, bar England and India, we actually play tests and you don't, or something much less sinister? Regards, Alex.
I interpret it differently, Alex. Like, I mean, because Elise Perry's younger than us, he goes like, I'll always see her as young, but she's a veteran now. Yeah. And I see, like, I actually see it more as old school, you know, not like so much an alpha thing, but more like I don't think those cherries are being like manufactured. I don't think she's deliberately leaving it on. And, you know, even they used to say in the past, like, oh yeah, you sandpaper the edges so there's nothing on there and there's heaps of cherries on the bat. Like, you hear that as a kid, and even as a kid, you'd be like, so I'm going to literally lessen the width of my bat so that when I go out there, fielders may think that I'm a good player. And that's going to impact the way that, I mean, it's just ridiculous stuff. I just think Elise Perry probably has bigger things to worry about than manicuring her bat, you know? And I'm a fan of that. I think players these days, with respect, you know, we've got a lot of time for the new generation. You've got to back them. But, like, they're more interested in the curating of the image than, I think, players of yore. Generally speaking, there's exceptions. And I think Elise Perry's just going, I don't give a fuck. And she would have heaps of red cherries because she hits heaps of balls, probably a lot of them out of the middle.
I liked a clean skin. After the game, which is separate to what I'm talking about here. But
that's right. Well, back in the day, clean skins were big because you didn't have the label on them and you're like, oh, this could be really good wine. Then you pretended you knew what wine was good and you didn't. And you just drank it because you've just generally, you drink to cover your issues and you feel more confident.
Yeah, that's right. It's just a social lubricant. I didn't like cherries on the bat. I didn't like it, but I do like the idea that if you had one in the middle of the bat, then people would be like, he's a good player, because one time, a ball hit the middle of his bat. There's no context to the cherry. To me, the cherry was equivalent to a hickey. Now, some people like hickeys, and those people are fucking psychopaths. If you are proud to have fucking a burst blood vessel in your neck to resemble some sort of like sexual attraction, it's like, hey, women find me attractive because one fucking tried to eat my neck once. Like, I don't like that. I don't want that. I don't want that on my neck. I don't want cherries on my bat. Okay?
I mean, like, if you got a hickey at age 15 or something, that's a real status symbol. Like, I'm kind of, I want to give your mid-teenagers a bit of a pass on that. But I think if you're
maybe
17 or above, rocking a hickey, yeah, I'm not saying it's hard drive stuff, but it's.
Well, at 15,
you're right. it's 15, a burst might be blood vessel.
Yeah, I mean, at 15, it's sort of like, it's a bit of like consumer confidence that you're putting out there. It's like, someone has found me attractive, so
enough to burst a blood vessel in my neck.
That's right, and this market is open for business. But
I like. Oh, he goes. I like the idea of if you know, I remember as a kid playing cricket, like if. You know, like, oh, I'm going to get this guy out. We can get this wicket. We've got some momentum. We're confident. And then if there's a cherry in the middle of the bat, oh, we're fucked here. You know, you lose your lines and your lengths. You know, there's a bit less energy in the field. Well, he's middled one in the past. And actually the bat's demonstrating that. It's just a, yeah.
Yeah, and then the idea of like sanding the edges so you don't have cherries on the outsides, on the outskirts of your stick. Like that to me is a bit like when Australia used to say we're going to target the captain, like we're going to try really hard to get this guy out.
Yeah,
like
he's got a target on his head.
Laser pointer. That's that actually would be a good way to sledge someone. Actually, bring a laser pointer onto the field and just put it in the batsman's eyes. Don't do that, don't actually do that unless it's finals.
Please don't do that. That's right. Or don't do it in South Africa. The cameras will kind of get you. Like they'll be. All right, this is from Will. He goes, I haven't read these RTGCs, but I can see from the format what this is going to be. And this is a follow-up. I can see this. This is from Will.
I think the first one from Will came in. This one is via Patreon, and I think the first installment of this RTGC was on Patreon, patreon.com/cricketers.
Okay.
Sign up. Yep.
All right. Well, I can explain this. So if that's true and this hasn't been read on the main pod, the first line explains it. It says, "Dearest Father, colon." So I think that's the title of this poem.
Yeah.
"Dearest Father, a sequel poem to the previous poem called Tall, Thick and Dad Dick." Thick spelt THICC. You're going to have to sign up to Patreon if you want to get the original Tall, Thick and Dad Dick, which I believe I corpsed about 8 times reading. So here we go. This is the sequel to poem Tall, Thick and Dad Dick by Will. Oh, I haven't read this. Fuck. "Dearest Father, when will you come to watch me play? Dearest Father, do you even know my name? Dearest Father, please don't call me Champ or Buddy. Dearest Father, I can count on one hand when you've said you love me. Dearest Father, have you ever hit a cover drive? Dearest Father, have you ever scored through the offside? Dearest Father, I play this stupid fucking game because of you. Dearest Father, you haven't ever scored more than an odd 22, brackets 15. Dearest Father, you played half a season on turf. Dearest Father, you were dropped for a guy whose nickname was Nerf. Dearest father, tell me that you would have played ones if it wasn't for the injury. Dearest father, you can't bowl more than 5 legal deliveries. Dearest father, 4s want to finish higher than 10. Dearest father, fuck it, I guess I'll go round again. So he finishes by saying, so I guess the question is, when did you realise you were a better cricketer than your dad?
For me, early. There was no one really in my family that was athletic. So I didn't have the lineage of, you know, like uncles and like, well, my dad or even like siblings necessarily who were like really, I even like really into sport. I mean, I started to watch cricket because my dad watched cricket, you know, and my brother as well. But yeah, I think I knew pretty early that I was better. I'm talking like 7 or 8.
Do you have your brother covered in cricket as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, mate. Like you could do, I bet if you did family history, which is always really interesting, and sometimes you uncover things you don't want to uncover. I bet there's someone there because you're a thick boy. You got big, thick old shoulders and rig. I actually saw on Insta, I saw on Instagram the other day.
Yeah,
there was some comment about rigs or someone else's rig, and someone wrote to you saying, like, it was meant to be a compliment, saying, "Oh, here goes, you've got one of the most underrated rigs around." And I sort of wanted to reply like, who the fuck says it's underrated? You know? Like, just sort of wanted to back you up a bit there. But you got big old shoulders, you know, national swimmer, you know, underage. And from all reports, like I never saw you play. We're in different grades and stuff, if I haven't sort of said that before.
Yeah.
But, you know, very good fielder. So, like, I've actually heard you described as an elite fielder. And really? So that requires coordination. Yeah. I've never told you that for masculinity reasons.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, and so it obviously runs in the blood somewhere. You can't field, I reckon, or catch and do any of that kind of highly coordinated stuff unless something's in the past. So you might have to look some shit up, you know?
So my brother went like balls deep into Ancestry.com. I think I might have said this before.
Yeah.
And this is going to be really shocking to people, but for the most part, it's actually... like English, Irish, and Scottish, but then I've got like 10% Viking in me.
Yeah, and you're always looking for that when you're like, and maybe yeah, a bit it's of like Viking a luxury gear. Of Anglo life. You're trying to look for something exotic beyond, you know, some just drab English background. Which some English people out there go, "No, you should be proud of your British." Shut up. I'm looking for the Irish stuff, and there is a lot of that. So
yeah,
I'm more on that side. Yeah, I'm not a red coat.
Nah, yeah, it's like, oh, mate, really fascinating history. Yeah, most of my family's in Kent. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, really? So was mine. Oh, so was Henry Berry.
Absolute fucking pack of Kents.
For me, that reminds me, a friend of mine tried to get K-E-N-T on the back of his year 12 jersey once. It was denied. He was Ducks. So...
Yeah, what about you? Like, when did you know you
had there was a takeover. There was a takeover.
Okay.
I reckon, like, I had great times in the backyard with my dad. I'm very grateful for it and all that kind of stuff. We played a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe 13, 14. So, but by 13, 14, like, you know how, like, things feel like an absolute lifetime as a kid. Like between the ages of 10 to 13, you feel like you've lived, like, 3 lives because you've had so much change and you've not been... You don't have like memories from that long. So like it felt like a very long time of like trying my absolute best in the backyard to then all of it, like to like compete with my dad. I had no idea if he was just playing along with me or not to all of it. It was probably a puberty thing, to be honest, to all of a sudden, like, you know, sort of getting the Shane Warne ball really wetting up the backyard and absolutely screaming them past his chin and going, "Oh, I fucking got this bloke here."
I've got this and not bloke here.
And not letting up at all.
The bloke was responsible for like feeding you that night. I fucking got this bloke here.
yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, in many ways, he still got me. Don't get me wrong. 36, still working on it.
Yeah.
I got to a point with Dad in the backyard where like, because my dad's a spinner, right? He was left arm orthodox. He was a good cricketer. But
did he play great?
He used to like, He played twos, yeah. He played combined Green Shield. He played against Jeff Thompson, combined Green Shield. So he could play.
He was good.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. He was good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, he didn't play by ones, did he? But didn't stick with it, did he? But he was busy having a child, who I call my sister.
He didn't sort of start a podcast and talking about the game and
First thing my sister did for me, actually, got in the road of his career. You beauty. he used to he's a spinner. He bowled left arm wrist spin, but also orthodox. And he used to enjoy the humiliation of tossing it up really slowly and beating me in flight, and then getting under my skin because he tossed it up really high. But because it's your dad, and I didn't know how to dance down the deck and get him on the full as I did later, and just deposit him over his head.
That's what Mark Order said.
Yeah, but he used to always say I beat you in flight there. I beat you in flight there. It used to really irritate. You know, obviously, an 11-year-old deals with that really well. And you get stumped. And anyway, good memories. Not psychologically traumatized. They are actually very treasured memories for me. So, and then I had uncles as well. They're all younger than him. Four. He has big Catholic family, four brothers as well, and they used to. Yeah. They used to bully me in the backyard.
A couple of bully boys,
But it was been the old days, it's good for him and all that kind of stuff. I still remember, unmowed. We had bare patches where we'd bat and bowl, and I still remember getting on the front foot and trying to drive one of my uncles, and I missed it, and I hit the grass, and I was given out caught behind, and mate, I was fucking. I was a tantrum child.
Incandescent.
Mate. And then, Steve Bidoff writes about this in Manhood. Australians don't have the same rituals as, say, people who grew up in the Amazon rainforest. Backyard cricket can be a male ritual to teach patience and accepting the umpire's decision and things like that. Well, Steve, and not when there's fucking injustice. I don't think that is very...
Have you ever copped a rough one, Stephen? Fuck me.
That's right. Anyway.
All right. Thank you very much to Adam Zampa. Thanks out there for watching and listening to TGC. As per usual, let's hope there's a fucking result in one of these games. In the third test in Lahore there, and also in the West Indies. And then the IPL starts next week. Oh, there's so much good stuff to come. See you guys next week.